Good morning, everyone. We're reading in Book 7, the Book of Yoga, Canto 4, the Triple Soul Forces. And last week we read about the last of the three soul forces, the Madonna of Light. And she has said that I shall save Earth if Earth consents to be saved. But there's something in the Earth which does not consent to be saved. And that is the next voice that we hear. The voice of human mind. The sense-shackled human mind. So that starts on page 516, at very near the bottom, line 495. We haven't started on this side for a long time. Will you start, Jana?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. She's
a voice of the sense shaping human mind, carry its brown complex power, caged by the limits of a mortal thought, bound in the chain of earthly ignorance. Imprisoned in his body and his brain, the mortal cannot see God's mighty hold, for share in his vast and deep identity, who stands unguessed within our ignorant hearts and knows all things because he is with all.
So this response, this warped, twisted response to the Madonna of Light, is a voice of the sense-shackled human mind. Shackles are chains, handcuffs. So what is chaining us? It is our senses, that we are dominated by the power of our senses, the sense inputs that is constantly coming. So this voice is giving a complaint, a proud complaint. This is the complaint of a God-like power that is hedged, it's restricted by the limits of a mortal's thoughts, the thoughts of a being who is dominated by ignorance and death. A godlike power that is bound, tied in the chains of earthly ignorance. The mind is a great divine power, a godlike power. But in us, at the moment, most of the time, it is limited by the senses and the kind of thoughts that we human beings have. It's limited also by this stage of evolution that we are at. It's bound in the chains of earthly ignorance. So that is our problem. Imprisoned in his body and his brain, the mortal, the human being like us, cannot see God's mighty whole. And even more painfully, we cannot share in that vast and deep oneness, which is standing unguessed within our ignorant hearts. We are carrying God within us, but we are not aware. He's unguessed. There he sits and he knows all things, because he is one with all. So if we could be one with that being who's in our hearts, we too could be one with all.
Did you say unfortunately?
Yes, I think it's unfortunate.
That was only why. It's at the limits of immortal thought. Yeah, imprisoning his body and his brain, the mortal cannot see God in that, and you say, why?
Why it's unfortunate why? That we can't see God, and we can't, because we can't feel it, we can't feel his presence, we're not aware of him. I think that's very unfortunate, yes. I think that's what we should all be trying to do. Because then we would be able to share his view of things, and we would be able to live human unity, because it would be absolutely natural if we would be seeing, feeling that oneness with all. Manoha, would you read?
Yes. Man only sees cosmic surfaces. Then, wondering what may lie deep from the sense, a little way he dives to depths below. But soon he stops. He cannot reach life's core or commune with the throbbing heart of things. He sees the naked body of the truth, though often baffled by endless guards. but cannot look upon her soul within. Then, furious for a knowledge absolute, it tears all details out and starts and digs. Only the shape's contents it holds for you. The spirit escapes or dies beneath his knife. He sees as a blank stretch, a giant waste, the crowding reaches of infinity.
Thank you. Anything to ask or to share?
He sees the naked body of the truth, though often baffled by her endless garbs, seems extremely contradictory. Garbs as clothing and naked body. Is there a reason why he put that on us?
Perhaps when he speaks of the naked body of the truth, he means the physical world. So we look at those cosmic surfaces. We find it difficult to understand even the cosmic surfaces, because actually these are many dresses or disguises that the truth puts on, no? But even if he manages to see through those garbs, all the different ones, he can't see what is the living soul of the truth within. It's as if we are looking at the surfaces of things. No? And man's mind, as far back as we can learn anything about it, it seems that human beings have been trying to understand the physical world around them. But he can't look. Nowadays, of course, there's all this business of dissection and going, penetrating more and more and more into details. Digging, stabbing. But because the truth is one, just that very process of analysis means that the spirit escapes. You only see the details, you don't see the connections. Why are these things happening like this? And because we see only surfaces, we look out into the universe and we see all this blank, empty space, and we think there's nothing there, that it's a giant waste, a giant desert, when actually it's packed full of the crowding riches of infinity that we can't be aware of, that we are not aware of. Of course, he's speaking about the sense-shackled mind. A mind which is dealing with the data given by the senses and the interpretations made by the surface mind. Because the anatomists can't find a place for our soul when they dissect the human body, they came to the conclusion that there's no such thing, that it is an illusion.
Interesting how the search he described and furious, no?
Yes. Yeah, there is some urge to know and to have an absolute knowledge, a knowledge that's really reliable. Mihon?
The finite he has made his center field. It's a plane dissects, masters its processes. Then which moves all is hidden from his gaze. His boring eyes miss the unseen behind. He has the blind man's subtle, unerring touch, or the slow traveler's sight of distant scenes. The soul's revealing contacts are not his. Yet is he visited by intuitive light, and inspiration comes from the unknown. But only reason and sense he feels as sure. They only are his trusty witnesses. Thus is he put his splendid effort vain, his knowledge scans bright pebbles on the shore of the huge ocean of his ignorance.
These are words of Isaac Newton, no? That all our explorations, when we come to the end of it, we have only been playing with pebbles on the shore of a huge ocean. So he was a wise man. He knew that he didn't know. Pouring suggests looking very closely at the details. Screwing your eyes up and looking at all the small details. So when we look like that, it's like a blind man feeling. He feels very well, but he can only see, feel or perceive details one after another. Or the slow traveler's sight of distant scenes. We see something in the distance and we see it progressively, but we can't see it fully. The soul's revealing contacts are not his. They don't come to our minds. But in spite of that, we have got an inner life, we have got inner mind, we've got the inner vital being, the subtle being. So intuitive light can come to human beings and inspiration does come, but we don't trust those things when they come. We have the feeling that all that we can rely on are senses and reason. Those are the only things that are sure. Only these things we trust as witnesses. If any other kind of intimation comes to us, we may wonder if we've just imagined it. Wishful thinking. So because of this, the splendid effort of human endeavor through the millennia is balked, it's frustrated. All that we can achieve is like children playing with bright pebbles on the shore of the huge ocean of our ignorance. It's a very, very nice thing to do, to play with bright pebbles on the seashore. But if we do only that, then we're missing something vast and tremendous. Paula.
Yet grandiose were the ascents of that cry. A cosmic pathos trembled in its tone. I am the mind of God's great ignorant world, ascending to knowledge by the steps he made. I am the all-discovering thought of man. I am a god fettered by matter and sense, an animal prisoned in a fence of thorns, a beast of labor asking for his food, a smith tied to his anvil and his forge. Yet have I loosened the cord, enlarged my room. I have mapped the heavens and analyzed the stars, described their orbits through the grooves of space, measured the miles that separate the suns, computed their longevity in time. I have delved into Earth's bowels and torn out the riches guarded by her dull brown soil. I have classed the changes of her stony crust and of her biography, discovered the dates, rescued the pages of all nature's plan.
Thank you. The last echo that we heard, our mother depicted him as a modern man amidst all his technological achievements, but with chains on, chained to them. And he did not realize that he was chained. But now this is the mind of man who has become aware of his limitations. He's recognizing, he fettered means shackled also. He recognizes that he's fettered, limited by matter and sense. That we have an animal body and we are restricted by that. We are active, we are creative, we like to make things, but we are like a smith who can't escape from his workshop. He's a slave of the work that he does. And yet he says, I have enlarged my room. I have become aware, I've mapped the heavens, analyzed the stars. All these are human achievements, no? And I've dug down into the earth and found all the hidden riches that are there. It's amazing how we can look into back into the past of the earth and discover the dates of her biography, at least fairly recent ones. There's kind of limit beyond which it seems we can't go. And so we think that we have rescued, now we have all the pages of nature's plans. Bless you. And let's go on, Stefania.
The tree of evolution I have sketched, each branch and twig and leaf in its own place. In the embryo track the history of forms, in the genealogy frame of all that lives. I have detected plas and cell and gene, the protozoa traced, man ancestors, the humble originals from whom he rose. I know how he was born and how he dies. Only what end he serves, I know not yet. Or if there is aim at all or any end. Or push of rich, creative, purposeful joy in the wide works of the terrestrial power.
Thank you. The protozoa are the simplest forms of life. The original simplest forms of life. So it's true, we've traced all this and we're finding out more all the time. But we still don't know why we are here. What is the end that we serve? Is there a purpose? Is there any meaning in our lives? Any aim? Any goal? Any push of rich, creative, purposeful joy in the wide works of the terrestrial power, earth, nature? Is it really going anywhere, or is it all only random and accidental? Ganga Lakshmi.
I have called her integrated processes known as life. A huge machinery is in my lungs. I have seen the cosmic energies for my use. I have all of her infinitesimal elements, and her invisible atoms have unmasked. All matter is a book. I have perused. Only some pages now are left to read. I have seen the ways of life, the path of the mind. I have studied the methods of the ant and
ape.
in the big, heavier realm of men and woman. If God is at work, his secrets I have found. But still the cause of things is left in doubt. Their truth flees from pursuit into the void. When all has been explained, nothing is new.
It's a strange thing about science. They are making their new discoveries, and each time they feel, oh, now we've got the thread. There's only a few pages are left to read, and we will have all the whole picture. But that just leads them on and on and on, because, in fact, there's many more pages to read than they realize. And even when all has been explained, nothing is really known.
Science, when we approach science and we see the touch of God everywhere. And I read someone who said that when I see the thumb, which is positioned against the four fingers, and I see the creative power of the genius, I don't know what he said, I think it was Divinci who said that. And I used to explain to my students, there is possibility mathematically you can explain that infinity is in between finite. For example, if you have 2 and 3, and you can go 2.5, then you can go 2.05. You can keep on going, and suddenly the graph goes down. So inside the finite...
But within the finite, the infinite is there.
You can perceive through science the infinity mathematically.
Not only mathematically, one can really experience it, that there's no limits to the transcendent. So the transcendent is everywhere.
So we can perceive, since nothing is explained, it's explained.
He's talking, this is the mind. This is the mind of man. This is the current level of the earth mind who is speaking like this. Yeah? Of course, there are other possibilities, but then we have to go beyond this mind that only sees the cosmic surfaces. They are there to be seen, no doubt about it. But here he's frankly saying, no, we don't know what is whether there's a meaning to all this or not, which is more than most scientists do. Yes, Don.
I don't know any specific examples, but amongst the huge range of scientists we have on the earth, those who are somewhat outspoken, you have atheists and you have very devout, whatever their religion may be. They don't know. That's my point. The scientists themselves.
No, if you stick to the what is currently accepted as scientific methods, you cannot know. It is agnostic. It has to say, I don't know. Well, here he's frankly saying it. Who's next? Andres.
What chose the process, whence the power sprang? I know not, and perhaps shall never know. A mystery is the mighty nature's birth. A mystery is the elusive stream of mind. A mystery, the protean freak of life. But I have learned, chance leaps to country. What I have built is seized and torn by fate. I can foresee the acts of matter's force, but not the march of the destiny of man. He is driven upon paths he did not choose. He falls trampled underneath the rolling wheels. My great philosophies are a recent guess, the mystic heavens that claim the human soul, are a charlatanism of the imagining brain, all this speculation or dream. In the end, the world itself becomes a doubt. The infinitesimal jest mocks mass and shape. A laugh peals from the infinite's finite mass.
Thank you. It says, I can foresee the acts of matter's force. That is to a certain extent predictable within certain limitations, but not the march of the destiny of man. But I remember a time in my youth when some psychological scientists really believed that it would become possible to determine the destiny of man. They thought that through psychology and sociological methods, there was a gentleman called Mr. Skinner who wrote a novel on that basis. And there are also a whole series of, I think perhaps by Isaac Asimov. They proceed on the basis that you can sociologically manipulate things, that just as there are physical laws, there must be laws of social processes, and that very, very soon at that time, they thought they would have that mastery, that they would be able to control the way that people thought and felt and behaved. I think that illusion has been shattered by now. The unpredictable is always intervening. They were very, very sure of themselves.
Even Asimov, he was a science fiction writer. Huh?
Yes, but he liked the idea that this theory had come up, and how would it work out if it were true? You know, how could it work out? I've forgotten the name of the series of stories that were about that. It's all a long time ago. But anyway, here the mind is clear enough to recognize that it's not possible for it to foresee the march of the destiny of man. Nevertheless, Sri Aurobindo has foreseen it and predicted it. But that comes from another level altogether. So what can the mind come up with? A speculation or a dream? Amitoj, in the end?
Yes. Perhaps the world is an error of our sight, a trick repeated in each flash of sense. An unreal mind hallucinates the soul in the distress vision of false reality. Or a dance of Maya reigns in the void unborn. Even if a greater consciousness I could reach, what profit is it then for thought to win? A real which is forever ineffable, or hunt to its lair, liar, the bodiless self, or make the unworthy the target of the soul? Nay, let me work within my mortal bounds, not live beyond life, not think beyond the mind. Our smallness saves us from the infinite. In a frozen grandeur, long and desolate, call me not to die the great eternal death, left naked of my own humanity in the chill vast of spirit's boundlessness. Each creature by its nature's limits lives, and how can one evade his native fate? Human I am, human let me remain, till in the inconscient I fall dumb and sleep. A high insanity, a chimera is this, to think that God lives hidden in the clay, and that eternal truth can dwell in time, and call to her to save ourselves and world. How can man grow immortal and divine, transmuting the very stuff of which he is made? This wizard gods may dream, not thinking men.
Yeah, thank you. So you recognize this?
Yes.
So how is Savitri going to answer?
Yeah?
only meant to die the great eternal death.
For each of us, the great eternal death would be if we lost our individuality. So this is what the ego fears all the time. Oh, I will cease to exist. So he says, yes, what is the use of me thinking and reaching these higher levels of consciousness that the sages tell me about, and to reach some reality which can never be expressed, to come in contact with some bodiless self, to aim for the unknowable. What is the meaning of that? I'm a human being. I'm limited by my nature. Let me remain within those boundaries. Don't call on me to live beyond life or think beyond the mind.
This is a refusal of evolution, accepting evolution.
It's a refusal to go beyond humanity, to think that... And there's something in us which really fears that, no? Our smallness saves us from the infinite. That's a bit scary. And then this picture that we have of what that unknowable might be, a frozen grandeur, lone and desolate, immobile, unchanging, unseizable. No. Don't call me to merge into that, to die the great eternal death, stripped off of my humanity in the chill, vast, cold, empty boundlessness of spirit. Maybe mind, that's how mind conceives the unknowable. And there's a lot in us that says, human I am, human let me remain. And though parts of us may be convinced, there are other parts who agree completely that it's a complete insanity to think that God lives hidden in the clay. How can man grow immortal and divine, transmuting the very stuff of which he is made? It's simply not possible. This wizard God's may dream, not thinking man. It's absolutely unreasonable.
There are quotes.
Yes, I...
Where does the quote start?
The quote starts at the top of page 518, line 536.
But you just explained, and that is also why you often sometimes also pointed how important it is that we keep our spiritual individuality, what Sri Aurobindo is showing us on.
Well, that's the only thing that can save us, no? How far we can come into contact with it and hold on to it, but that spirit is there. That's what Sri Aurobindo tells us. And it will evolve in its own way, despite all these voices of the world that say, oh, let me remain human, let me remain human. There's something else in us, and I think that that's what Savitri is going to speak about in her reply now. Praveen, would you read?
And Savitri heard the voice. A warped answer heard. And turning to her being of light, she spoke. Madonna of light, mother of joy and peace, thou art a portion of myself put forth to raise the spirit to its forgotten heights, and wake the soul by touches of the heavens. Because thou art, the soul draws near to God. Because thou art, love grows in spite of hate, and knowledge walks unslain in the pit of night. But not by showering heaven's golden rain upon the intellect's hard and rocky soil can the tree of paradise flower on earthly ground, and the bird of paradise sit upon life's cloud, and the winds of paradise visit mortal air. Even if thou rain down intuition's rays, the mind of man will think it earth's own green, his spirit by spiritual evil thing, or his soul dream shut in sainthood's brilliant self, where only a bright shadow of God can come. His hunger for the eternal thou must nurse, and fill his yearning heart with heaven's fire, and bring God down into his body and life. One day I will return, his hand in mine, and thou shalt see the face of the Absolute. Then shall the holy marriage be achieved. Then shall the divine family be born. There shall be light and peace in all the world.
Mm-hmm.
So in her answer here, it's the mind is there, it's a power, but not by releasing its hold a little bit can we open it. Actually is by bringing God within that we release to get beyond the mind. This is the answer.
Something like that, no? Mm.
I was looking for a shortcut, you see.
Mm.
If something would just release this, which is savitri, as it was.
Mm. Yes. Mm.
So we follow in the footsteps of those who have broken that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But it's interesting, what she says is it's not by enlightening the mind.
Mm.
Mm. His hunger for the eternal thou must nurse. Increase the aspiration, fill his yearning heart with heaven's fire. So this is the work of the Madonna of Light. There was the Madonna of Compassion, the Madonna of Strength. Each of these soul powers has their important role to play. And here she defines what is the role of this Madonna of Light. Your job is to raise the spirit to its forgotten heights, to wake up the soul by touches of the heavens. So she's not going to speak to the mind. She's going to speak to our inner being. Because you exist, the soul of human beings can draw close to God. Because you exist, love can continue to grow in spite of hate, and knowledge can walk unslain in the pit of night, in the pit of unconsciousness and ignorance. The forward march of knowledge will continue. But As you pointed out, no? Beautiful imagery, she says, not by showering heaven's golden rain upon the intellect's hard and rocky soil. There's nothing there in the intellect which can respond to that golden rain. No? That's not the way to make the tree of paradise blossom on earthly ground, in matter. It's not the way to bring the bird of paradise to sit on the boughs of the tree of life, no? And the winds of paradise to visit mortal air. And she points out the danger, no, that this access to higher inspirations can, if you rain down intuition's rays, the mind of man, the soul may respond differently, but the mind of man will think, oh, that's just natural. You know, this is a product of earth. This is a light of earth, and this will lead his soul into spiritual ego, which is a terrible dead end. No? He says the other possibility is that the soul will withdraw into a state of sainthood, being a saint. It's a very, very brilliant state, but it's a very limited state. It's a cell, a hermit's cell or a prisoner's cell. And it's too small. Only a bright shadow of God can enter there. They can't give the full expression of the divine in life and matter. So the solution is that what you must do is you must nurse man's hunger for the eternal. There's something in us which is longing for something else, higher and truer and more real and more blissful. So that's what has to be nursed. Fill his yearning heart with heaven's fire, the flame of Agni. This will be able to bring down God into his body and life. And she promises that she, as she promised the others, that when she's finished her mission, she will return. And then I will give you some power that you don't have now. You shall see the face of the Absolute.
Savitri will give
to the Madonna of Light. She's promised to each of them, no? That you are limited, you are missing something. I'm going to fulfill my mission and then I'll be coming back. And then I will give you what you are lacking. The power that will enable you to overcome that resistance of those warped echoes from the lower levels of the nature. So then shall the holy marriage be achieved. Marriage between the two ends of spirit, spirit and matter. Then shall the divine family be born, and there shall be light and peace in all the worlds.
The dialogue in the soul of Savitri is inside. The dialogue is Madonna.
We can say that this is a kind of symbolic drama which is being played out in the inner mind of Savitri.
I am the soul.
By all the Madonnas we had here, one what was missing, what you pointed on the hands and also showed seen. She has no Madonna of Light, Mother of Joy and Peace, and then and those shall see the face. So the seeing is not there.
Yes. What she's not seeing, she's seeing a great deal. She brings light and knowledge, but she's not seeing the face of the Absolute. We could almost say the personalized aspect of the Supreme, of the Supreme Person.
But in the body,
that's what it says, in the body.
Yeah. And I tell you something. Is there some aspect of the mother when Mother Terre in 1962 in agenda to Supreme, she tell I return with my he explained something and he tell she return for finish my agenda after 50 years in 1962 2012 it was that. I tell when I go to the class of Shravani, I tell Mother, come back, finish his agenda, c'est-à-dire his transformation in the body, in the sense, but in the body, some ask, maybe not only one woman, but maybe some woman is very receptive to his
I dropped it. I tell him just like that. But when I read this, something in my heart comes. Is after cyclone, and I discussed when Shalom came to my room recently. Again, I tell him this aspect when I discuss with him about some Shobindo and the mother, and he tells the cyclone clean something in Oroville and in Ashram also. Very deep, deep, deep unconscious. Is somebody tell is a great attack? Maybe, but also he cleans something. Something real turn, another sense, not the same. For me it's like that. Is not possible to go the same way. It's totally opposite from my experience.
So if we look at page 507, where she speaks to the Madonna of suffering, it's exactly the same format. No, she says, you are a portion and this is your work because thou art the wretched still can hope. But what you are lacking is power. You have the power to solace, to comfort, but not to save. So one day I will return as a bringer of strength. No? I will make you drink from the Eternal's cup. You will have all his strength. Even his force, it will pass through your limbs. And you will have this calm control of wisdom. So when that happens, when she becomes strong enough to counteract this voice of the beast from the lower nature, no? Then thy love shall be the bond, the uniting tie of all humankind. Compassion will be the key note of nature's acts, of all the acts of nature. Then misery shall pass, abolished from the earth. And then the world will be freed from that anger and resentment that's there in the depths, no? And the resentment leads to cruelty. And the world will be freed from that pain. There shall be peace and joy forevermore. Sorry? Read the whole thing. I think we don't have time this morning. But we can just look at these answers of Savitri. No? So on page 514, she speaks to the Madonna of strength. No? And she says, you are to give man strength because you are in him, man hopes and dares. And because your strength is in him, man's souls can climb the heavens and walk like gods in the presence of the Supreme. But strength alone is not enough. Without wisdom, power is like a wind. It can breathe upon the heights and kiss the sky, but it can't build. It can't build the extreme eternal things. So she says, when I come back, I will give you the mirror of God. You'll be able to look at yourself and see yourself and the world as God sees them. All that will be reflected in the bright pool of thy soul. And then your wisdom will be as vast thy power. And then that hate which is there in the lower nature shall dwell no more in human hearts. And fear and weakness will just disappear, and the cry of the ego shall be hushed within. That lion roar that's always claiming the world for its food. All that will be at peace, and everything will be might, strength, and bliss, and happy force.
In all her replies, she's anticipating what will be when she...
When she has completed her mission, fulfilled her mission, yes.
Again, when he says, his hand in mine, his hand is the hand of Satyavan.
Probably it's the hand of Satyavan, yes, but it's also the hand of the Supreme Soul.
Or whatever Satyavan
means. Represents. Yeah.
And also I have another little doubt here, regarding to this part where he says, winds of paradise visit mortal air, even if thou rain down intuition rays and so on. How does it... fit with the descent of the supramental of the 29th of February?
I don't think it fits.
Because here it says that it's not...
no,
we
you
must
can't...
find these things within ourselves and they will not come from outside.
No, she says, I'm going to bring them back. I'm going to bring these things so that these soul forces that now are limited, they will be fulfilled. And
it says, but not by showering heaven's golden ray upon the intellect.
On the intellect, she says, don't shower it on the intellect. That's no use at all. The mind cannot respond. So what you have to do is something else. You have to nurse that power of aspiration and longing which is there in the deep in the human heart. And that will enable it, make it possible to bring God down into the body and the life for each individual.
I have a question about this last word in the... Here he says there will be light and peace in all the worlds. And
yes, in all
plural,
the worlds, yes.
Plural worlds.
Yes.
Not in this, just in this world.
In all the worlds. All the subtle worlds, I suppose. So if Earth is transformed, all the subtle worlds actually are here condensed in Earth. No? So if the transformation is done in matter, then it will be done for the whole universe. That's the implication. Yes. That's why Sri Aurobindo gives such a importance to human beings, you know, that we are supposed to participate in this work, to make it happen here in the physical world. All kinds of things can happen in subtle planes, but that's not what's wanted. The transformation has to happen here.
And the divine family is all the souls that are awakened.
No, all the souls will be born here on earth. So these are wonderful promises.
And the holy marriage is what?
I think it's the crudely put, we could say it's the marriage of spirit and matter, or soul and nature. But we shouldn't restrict the suggestiveness of these words, whatever they suggest to you. Good. So in this series of, in this canto, Huta has done a beautiful series of portraits of Savitri to accompany these promises, these three promises. And I think there's one in the previous canto also, at least four altogether. So the next canto is, in fact, the finding of the soul. That's the next step. We'll move on to that next week. So shall we hear the three passages for the Madonna of Light?
Hard and rocky ground.
Ascending still, her spirit's upward roots. She came into a high and happy space. Here, living center of that vision of peace, a woman sat in clear and crystal light. A low music heard became her floating voice. Oh, Savitri, I am thy secret soul. I have come down to the wounded, desolate earth to heal her pangs and lull her heart to rest. I shall save us if earth consents to be saved. She spoke, and from the ignorant nether plain, a cry, a warped echo, naked and shuddering, came. I am the mind of God's great ignorant word. Ascending to knowledge by the steps he made. If God is at work, his secrets I have found, but still the cause of things is left in doubt. I know not, and perhaps shall never know. Human I am, human let me remain, till in the inconscient I fall dumb and sleep. And Savitri heard the voice, the warped answer heard, and turning to her being of light, she spoke, Madonna of light, Mother of joy and thou art a portion of myself put forth to raise the spirit to its forgotten heights and wake the soul by touches of the heavens. Even if thou rain down intuition's rays, the mind of man will sink its earth's own grief. His hunger for the eternal thou must nurse and bring God down into his body and life.